The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Build a fire and gather round the tree. Fill a glass and maybe come and sing with me. So kiss me under the mistletoe.
Good yawning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Monday, the 1st of December, 2025, and you are on the clock with turn signal green. Why? Because you need to be the change you want to see in the world, and if that's the case, today my name is Turn Signal Green. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. I got a guest joining us in studio this morning. We're going to be talking about the Bahamas Women's Health Survey in a moment. But before we get there, I woke up to the saddest news, two stories. The first in today's Tribune, man shot five times, dies after ambulance crashes. The second story has not hit the papers today. There was a traffic fatality on Harold Road early this morning. And when I saw the first headline, man shot five times, dies after ambulance crashes. Let's read from it quickly. A teenager shot five times on Saturday was alive and responsive before the ambulance carrying him to the hospital collided with another vehicle at the traffic light at Shirley Street and Hawkins Hill, the Tribune understands. The crash was captured in a video now circulating online. If somebody have that, please send it to me. The man, whom police said was 18, ultimately died. The shooting happened shortly after 4 p.m. on Saturday, November the 29th. Police said officers were called to Sutton Street off Kemp Road, where they found the teen suffering from apparent gunshot injuries. Emergency medical services began transporting him to hospital. Police said preliminary investigations suggest the teen had been in the area of a nearby cemetery when the occupants of a gray vehicle opened fire in his direction before speeding off. Condolences to the family of this young man. While police have not publicly addressed the transport crash, the video circulating online shows the ambulance carrying the victim colliding with an SUV in the intersection, raising questions about the sequence of events and the teen's condition at the time of impact. Police said four people, two men aged 31 and 22, and two women aged 29 and 22, have been arrested in connection with the shooting. I am thinking about the traffic collision. I was thinking about it on my way to work this morning when I approached the green light at Shirley and Village coming from the Eastern Road. I had the green light. I was coming over the green light, and in the middle, out of nowhere, a truck decided to turn left on red, which is illegal at that intersection. It's not permitted. I don't care how old you are or how nice your church dress look. It's not permitted. That truck decided to swing left on his red light, but not just into his lane, you know, because if you are entering Shirley Street, which is two lanes heading in the same direction, you're supposed to enter the lane on the side of the road that you're on, right? That's what you're supposed to do. See, because I was wondering, how did that accident at Hawkins Hill happen with an emergency vehicle that obviously had its sirens on because it was transporting a young man that got shot 5 times to the hospital. Like, how did that collision happen? It happened because y'all don't care about anything except yourself. That man in that truck swung wide illegally into the road and not just turned into his lane, which would be the safest thing to do since you decided you're going to be a reckless maniac this morning. You decided to turn across 2 lanes and swing your jet skis across the road with you in the face of oncoming traffic. And then y'all act like other people are the problem. See, from long time, I made this point, and people, you know, when you make a point, it's just a point. It's just a point in law, and then people don't like you because of it. Imagine you have to tell big grown professionals that when emergency vehicles are approaching, your job is to safely proceed to the edge of the road, right? With the 2 lanes, like everybody's supposed to come to the left. But since y'all can't coordinate that, you're at the very least supposed to make way and cling to your edge of the road at a stop, allowing space for the emergency vehicle to come through. Y'all act like if God wanted you to know it was an emergency, he would have given you a stroke. And this is every age of Bahamian. From the 15-year-olds who ain't supposed to be driving to the 85-year-olds who ain't supposed to be driving. Like, y'all have the worst attitude on the road. People have now started stopping their cars in the middle of the road, mad at you that you would dare to blow your horn at them because, God forbid, you don't give them time to decide what they're going to do next. That's a clear indicator that you shouldn't have a license. And I want to say good morning to the patrons of St. Matthew's Anglican Church who continue to park dangerously. I mean, it's an offense, you know, to park like on top of the pedestrian crossing. But that's okay because it's your own parishioners. It's your own people, the disabled and the elderly in your own church. Those are the lives that you're risking. We know you don't care about the transient community, the tourists that may walk from Shirley Street to the new bridge. You don't care about any of that, but what about your own parishioners in your own church? So yeah, I woke up this morning wondering, how did this accident occur, the crash occur at Hawkins and Shirley Street? Given I know the boy them had their sirens on. We know that. And then it only took me 3 minutes on the road this morning to see clearly how accidents like that happen. We can't stay on this point for very long, but I want to just make a quick connection because it's like we're tone deaf. We can't hear sirens. We can't hear the things that we're supposed to hear. Headline, Thompson dismisses outdated registry claims. Let me tell you why in this instance I wouldn't dismiss. That's not his own words. The registry claims. Because you see these political parties? These political parties could mobilize. They could mobilize ants to move the old bridge to where the new bridge is. They could mobilize anything, these political parties. They could mobilize people to come out and support political activities. They're very good at it. They're professional at it. They're experts at it. Why this expertise can't translate into governance, I don't understand, right? But if the political party said they did the canvassing, they touched the people, I would kind of sit with them and figure out what they mean when they say they only found 5,200 eligible voters, only touched 2,200 people, right? Like, I would ask them, what does that mean? Because if anything, the political parties do well, it's politicking. Governance, not so much. But that politicking, they on that game. Just before we go, last headline, teachers vote for industrial action. We was waiting. We were waiting. I'm not saying I don't trust what the prime minister says. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I could have told you you'd still be waiting. Anyway, we're going to transition from that point. I see my guest is in the Zoom room. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am good, thank you. Welcome to 16 Days of Activism Against Agenda-Based Violence. Joining me this morning is Alicia Wallace, founder and executive director of Equality Bahamas. Today, we're going to be talking about some of the events on the calendar of events for Equality Bahamas' 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence. We're going to be talking about the Bahamas Women's Health Survey and some data collected in the survey. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
How you do?
Great to be here. Very happy to be able to have this conversation about the Global 16 Days campaign. We have lots of events lined up over the next week and a little bit, and really looking forward to seeing people come out and engage with us.
Absolutely. So, 16 Days of Activism began on November 25th, which is the International Day to Eliminate or Eradicate Violence Against Women and Girls. It ends on December 10th, International Human Rights Day. The global focus this year is on digital violence, but Equality Bahamas' focus this year is reclaiming our rights. Can you speak just briefly to the theme?
Yes, every year we have a theme, and we usually put significant focus on femicide. We have been focusing on that over the last few weeks, particularly after the murder of 30-year-old Lauren Saunders. And over the course of the year, we've really been paying attention to the rollback in rights that we're seeing globally, the shift to lots of anti-rights rhetoric, and a lot of negative things that are happening in the Bahamas, in the region. We can look to Trinidad and Tobago and what's happening there, and across the world, and thinking about ways that we could take a positive approach to addressing those issues. And we really landed on taking back our power and reclaiming what is ours, reclaiming what we created, what we have built, and that includes human rights. There was a time that human rights were really celebrated to some extent in the Bahamas, and there was advocacy, there was solidarity across a geographic space. You know, we know that the Bahamas is very active in the movement to end apartheid in South Africa. Mm-hmm. But decades later, there's this sense that human rights are foreign, it's a foreign agenda. So we really want to reclaim that. We want to take back human rights and our orientation to it, a positive orientation to human rights and understanding why they are good for us. And in the process of that, we're also reclaiming our health. We're reclaiming our memory. We're reclaiming our bodies and our stories and narratives around things that have happened to our bodies and happened to us more wholly, right, beyond the physical.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Reclaiming our health and reclaiming our bodies. It made me think of memories, right, of interactions with grandparents, with aunts, with uncles in family island communities where bush medicine, right, was the treatment, right? Like bush medicine was the solution. Bush medicine was the medicine. And how, as we sort of move away from family, move away from indigenous culture, because even though Africans are not indigenous to the Bahamas or to the region, Africans have been here so long, and due to the nature of their arrival, how they arrived here, Africans can claim a degree of indigeneity or indigenousness in this region, right? But to be able to reclaim those memories of bush medicine.
Absolutely. Reclaiming what we know, what we have known for a long time, and sometimes move away from for various reasons, right? Just the idea that medicine is provided in a bottle with a cap that's hard to take off, you know, or it has to be prescribed by a doctor. Mm-hmm. And not understanding that before there were these kinds of medicines, a form of pills and capsules and things like that, there was nature. There were the plants that were provided by the earth to help us to heal our own bodies and to take care of our own bodies. And we did a great job of that for a very long time. And those methods are still true. They're still working. It just might be that we're not working them.
Yeah, there you go. And so the first event for the 16 days was a session on reclaiming memory with Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell-Dean, who is the chair of the Bahamas National Reparations Committee, and traveled recently to London with the CARICOM reparations team. to present their position to the Crown on reparations.
Yes, and that session was very interesting to hear Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell-Dean in conversation with Keisha Ellis, who's also a part of the Bahamas National Reparations Committee.
And a lecturer at the university.
Yes, in political science. And hearing about the ways that they have been thinking about memory and how we have lost memory, lost ways of knowing, and how we can get that back. And that is by really recognizing our own knowing, our inner knowing.
Mm-hmm.
It is talking to people who are older than us, our parents, our grandparents. Some of us still have great grandparents we can talk to about what they experienced and what they learned along the way and what they struggled with and how they managed to overcome. And many of them have advice for us, right? Of talking about ways that we might be going about things that they know aren't effective because they have had certain experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really interesting conversation. I actually watched the recording right after the event closed because, you know, when you're in it, you're just trying to hold on to every word, but more words are coming. And I found it so interesting. I had to go back and watch it to let it kind of wash over me again because there was so much gold in mm-hmm. what they were sharing.
Mm-hmm. Listen, as you're saying that, I remember a story about my grandmother, Corinne Mitchell. The one time she almost made me, you know, she made me fall out my chair. Not even the King Charles's, my cousin's story made me fall out my chair. But this one involved, I mean, it's basically the advice was every woman needs a pair of red panties. And I, you know, I almost died. I almost died when my grandmother said that aloud. And I had to listen to figure out, right, what the lesson was. It was a lesson on economic and legal agency, right? It was a lesson on a woman's need to create, to maintain, and to use economic and legal agency in the face of in the face of predatory structural systems like banks and legal systems, that sometimes you got to be prepared to raise the red flag on them, right? Like sometimes talking to your family, they got lessons for you, right? But sometimes respectability politics prevents them from telling them. But so the first event was Reclaiming Memory. The second event was a screening of Two-Face, Gender Inequality in the Bahamas that occurred on Thursday evening at NAGB. And the next event on the calendar?
That is tomorrow, Tuesday, December 2nd, mm-hmm. with Soraya Chamali. We will be in conversation with her about her new book, All We Want Is Everything, How to Dismantle Male Supremacy.
Okay, see, because last week, Ms. Wallace, I had asked on the show with you on the 19th, which was International Men's Day, I'd asked the audience, what more do men want? And in our segment, what more do women want? Ms. Soraya Chamali, is she's prepared to answer the question for us? Because I like the answer.
All We Want Is Everything.
That's okay.
The title of the book.
So let's explore the title the book just for a second, just very briefly, not giving too much away.
Well, Chamali is a feminist, a journalist, activist, and has been thinking about gender-based violence for a long time. She has been thinking about gender inequality and writing about it very often, very frequently online. Mm-hmm. She has written several books. The first book is Rage Becomes Her, where she really explored anger and the ways that anger is allowed for some people, largely men, and not allowed for others, like women, and what the power of our rage is. Then her second book that was published last year was Resilient, The Resilience Myth. Really, really interesting book that looks at resilience in a different way from we normally talk about it.
Yeah.
So taking it beyond that idea of individuals having to be strong and having to withstand so much and being able to endure,
mm-hmm.
shifting that to resilience really being about community and being able to lean on one another and call for help, answer other people's calls for help, and be willing to ask for and accept help. And she really used a number of case studies, including Hurricane Dorian, to show that women typically have higher or stronger resilience, and it's because women are better at building community and being there for one another and giving and accepting help. And now in this book, All We Want Is Everything, she is looking at this form of oppression, this gender-based oppression, and this quote-unquote supremacy of men, people who are male, as a driver of every other form of oppression. So this is the one that she is seeing as foundational, a foundational form of oppression that really drives other forms of oppression. And the publishers call this book a bold and urgent call to name and dismantle the systems that diminish our lives and to reimagine a world built on justice, care, and collective power. So this book was just published on November 11th. So I haven't finished reading it yet, so I can't speak too much to what's in the book, but we will hear more about it from Soraya Chamali herself.
All right. On Wednesday evening, we have Reclaiming Recovery, People-Centered Disaster Preparedness, and that session will be live in person at National Art Gallery of the Bahamas.
That one is now virtual.
It's virtual now? Okay.
So anyone can join that on Zoom. We will have with us Yemi Knight, who is based in Barbados, so it's much easier to just make it a virtual session.
Okay. We couldn't fly in?
We couldn't fly her in. We don't have the money like that.
Man, look here. If she did bring like half a pallet of Accra, a fish dumpling, we could have fish fritter, we could have sold them, man. We got to be resilient. We can figure this out. Okay. But that's wonderful. More people can join into the conversation because it is virtual, people-centered disaster preparedness. And then on Thursday night.
Thursday, we have a virtual film screening.
Mm-hmm.
We are watching together Tiny Movements. And this is a documentary by Jen Green, who is a survivor, and Laura Sweeney, who helped her to produce this documentary that's currently making the rounds at different film festivals in the U.S. And they have been very kind to allow us to do a virtual screening, which, you know, is not very common.
Mm-hmm.
Jen Green is actually a friend of mine, an American woman who experienced marital rape. And she has been on a journey over the last few years that is just multi-layered, trying to get justice through the criminal justice system for what happened to her, what her husband did to her.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get a divorce, which she finally just got, I think, over 6 years later in the process. Trying to protect her children and also taking her body back,
mm-hmm.
and coming back into herself. And she chose to do that through dance because she has a background in dance. She's a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she recorded herself every day dancing in her very small kitchen, sharing that on Instagram. And over a period of time, she shared a little bit more about what had happened to her. And at first, it was kind of cryptic. You couldn't really tell. You just knew something bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
But as she got more comfortable and as she shared more and more dances, more of the details came forward. And this documentary really covers that period of time,
mm-hmm.
as well as the court case, the criminal court case against her husband. It's short. It's under 30 minutes. So we'll be able to watch it and have really fulsome conversation with Jen and Laura.
Is that session online as well?
That is online, yes. So they will be joining us virtually, and we will be able to watch this film together. You can register where all of the other events registration is. It's on our Luma page. So that's lu.ma/16days25. That's where you'll find the full lineup and be able to register for any of the events that you're interested in.
Absolutely. And this weekend on Saturday, there's a workshop. There are three events scheduled, I think, for this Saturday coming up.
Yes, we start with an in-person session at Poinciana Paper Press, and the other two are virtual. If you come to the in-person at Poinciana Paper Press, we welcome you to just hang out with us and tune into the virtual ones together. We start the day with a poetry erasure workshop, which will be a lot of fun. All of the sessions at Poinciana Paper Press are a lot of fun, but Sonia Farmer will be guiding us through the process of creating what's commonly known as blackout poetry. So we'll be looking at found text, so people can bring in their own books or stories or magazines. We'll have newspapers with articles on different topics. And basically, we will look at the text that exists and then use a marker or a pen to mark out some words and phrases. And the words that are left would form our new poem. Yeah. So it's a sort of different way of creating poetry. I think it's really interesting. I think it might be a lot of fun, especially for people who might be afraid of the blank page. You don't have to start with just that blank page. You have some words there to work with.
Mm-hmm. Let me say to the listening audience right now, trust me when I tell you that Ponciana Paper Press workshops are the best workshops. I mean,
the best
work. You come out of there having made something unique and different, something you've never made before. It's always an awesome time. Ms. Wallace, I got some calls lighting up the board. Let's take this call, then we're going to go to a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to look at some data from the Bahamas Women's Health Survey. Good morning, caller.
Hey, morning, Ms. Green. Your guest. How are you doing?
Hey, good, thank you. How are you?
Wait a minute. Boy, remember the good old days when sorcy and warm ginger ale could cure anything?
Yeah, buddy.
That was the good old days.
Yeah, you know that.
Ginger ale could cure stupidity, you know.
I'm telling you, but you know what? Ginger ale still could cure stupidity. It's just that they don't be gingering the ginger ale the way they used to back then.
Boy, the good old days. Hard.
In fact, I know, I'm sure most people don't know that hundreds, if not thousands, of antibiotics and medicines and medical treatments or pharmaceutical treatments are derived from ginger. Hundreds, if not thousands. Also, let me give you all some advice. Bejarina, Cerasi, and aloe. They treat good friends. They either could be alone or they could be all together. Take them one at a time or three at a time. But talk to your doctor before you take them. Talk to your doctor before you drink bush medicine, because it's real medicine and it could interact poorly with the other medications that you're taking. Treat it like a medicine. Talk to your doctor before you consume it. Why? Because hundreds and hundreds of pharmaceutical solutions are being derived from the things we call bush medicine every day. You're on the clock with Turn Signal Green. Be the change you want to see in the world. We go into a break. We'll be right back.
Very gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Reliable and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
At Cleveland Clinic, you set your course, not cancer. So when your journey takes an unexpected turn, you seek out the experts who've conquered it before, and you forge new paths to help fight cancers. For every route to a cure, for every care in the world. See how we're innovating cancer care at Cleveland Clinic today.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.
We'll be right back.
morning and welcome back to On the Clock with Turn Signal Green. Okay, I've got a quick note about Montague Beach closure. I think Best of the Best or some big event is coming up. I think because you know why? I don't have to know. I don't have to know what event is coming up at Montague Beach. You know what has to happen? Public notice of closures of public spaces, whether temporary, partial, or just a slight change in schedule of opening. These things must be given to the public. I don't need to know when Best of the Best is. You'd like me to know. You'd like me to be a part of your marketing campaign so it'll be a success. But you're supposed to tell me. You're supposed to make sure I can't do anything but know. I bring this notice, I think we'll talk about it a little later, from patrons of the public beach who could not access it at their regularly scheduled times this morning. But we're going to get back to that. All right. Good morning, Ms. Wallace. I see I got another call on the line. Let's take this caller, and then we're going to get into data from the Bahamas Women's Health Survey. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning, Ms. Green. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Ms. Green, you got a pen? You want to write this in, write this down for me, please? I need you to follow up on this for me, please.
I got a pen.
G-U-I-M.
Uh-huh.
E-A.
Guinea?
Right.
You mean you're talking about the coup in Guinea this week?
No, I don't know.
Okay, we're talking about Guinea.
Just a Guinea hen plan and its benefit.
All right, Guinea hen plan, I got you.
Man, Ms. Green, listen to me. That's an awesome plan.
Well, listen, why you don't call back at 11, where we have some more space to talk about it.
Okay, no problem.
Because I like it.
Yeah, do you at the same time? Because we could elaborate on that some more.
Guinea hen plan. I like guinea hen. I like guinea weed. I like guinea corn. I like all of it. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right.
All right, let's go to the next caller quickly, producer, and then we're going to get to the Bahamas Women's Health Survey. Good morning, caller. Good morning. How are you?
As usual, grateful to be alive.
This is good.
Good morning, dear guest, Ms. Wallace.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Green.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Green.
I'm here. I hear you.
What is the topic?
So we're talking with Equality Bahamas about the 16 days of global activism against gender-based violence. In this segment right now, we're going to look at an excerpt, a quick grab capture of data from the Bahamas Women's Health Survey. I'm going to ask Ms. Wallace, what is the Bahamas Women's Health Survey? When was it conducted? Because ain't nobody surveyed me, and I as a woman. I sure as a woman, and I as a particular type of woman. I know y'all ain't got very many women like me here. I can't imagine why you didn't want my information in the survey. But what's the survey? When was it conducted? Where can we find the data from the survey? What's the intended outcome? Like which agencies are stakeholders in this discussion? And we're going to delve into some of the data.
You know, like how you were talking about the women celebrating last week?
Yeah. What do you call that? You mean National Women's Week?
Yeah, I thought you was connecting it with this.
All of that is connected. All of that is connected.
You know, on TV, I hear, and you know, I can't see, but I hear in where they celebrating either the Governor General or assistant. I think I hear one with the Commissioner of Police also.
That's happening? You hear that on the TV right now?
No, not right now. I mean, I didn't want to say zeddiness, but you know, through the week.
Yeah.
All the week they was playing it, and I start thinking over the weekend. I said, "See, just now you just pointed out that you was a woman, right?
Uh-huh.
They didn't ask you, so I was wondering, like, you're a special kind of woman. I call you a bold woman, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, ain't everyone bold like you to say like your lifestyle and all of that? And I know it should not be important, but would they think about, because you have something to offer also, just like the other ladies, like a governor general or anyone else. You're smart too. You mightn't be being around like long as them. But
and wear dress as well as them. I may not.
You have something to offer. So can we expect a person like Erin Green to be celebrated as a female? You know, when we talk about, and she might say, I mean, she says she's gay or lesbian, but should that stop her from being celebrated? And when am I going to hear, what you say the name of this group is?
Equality Bahamas?
Yes. Do they? Did I miss it? we have Jonquel Jones representing the Bahamas, right? Everyone mm-hmm. mightn't agree with whatsoever her choices is, right? But she's representing the Bahamas. So it's equality Bahamas, like, from the time she been doing these things, representing, do they gather around and celebrate her? Should we expect it in the future, or maybe I just miss it and you been doing it? I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Now, listen, when I say as a special kind of woman, okay, when you said Papa, like, can we expect that kind of woman to be celebrated? See, that's the important part. It doesn't matter whether you celebrate me or not. What matters is that you allow young people to imagine that they could be different and still be celebrated for the contributions they make to their country. You don't have to honor Erin, but if you say out loud, a person like Erin can never get an honor, then you create in the environment, you create in the collective consciousness, right? These barriers that cause young people to stop imagining that them and their different selves could have a positive contribution to the country. That's why it's important. Not that you have to honor every sissy that does something important, but that you create a space that does not shut down the idea that somebody who is different could make a valuable contribution to the country. Ms. Wallace?
Yeah, this is such an interesting question. At Equality Bahamas, we're really focused on advocacy, public education, and community engagement. So we don't do a lot of, you know, honoring of people. I think there are a lot of organizations that do that and spend money and also make money doing that. It's not necessarily our role, but we do try to highlight when we see people doing incredible things, people of different genders, of diverse genders, in particular women and other genders, people of different sexualities, people with disabilities, people who are migrants. We are centering these people, these communities in our work. And we occasionally highlight specific instances, circumstances, and people, but it's not really a primary part of our work.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I just want to say, if you all gonna recognize me for being miserable, not just being miserable, right, but taking misery and turning it into energy, kinetic energy. That's what I want to be recognized for. Don't worry about them other stuff. Those are they're a part of me, but they're not the biggest part of me at all. All right, Ms. Wallace, Bahamas Women's Health Survey data. Tell us, what is the Bahamas Women's Health Survey and how did you find out about it?
Well, I'm very limited in what I can say about this project, mm-hmm. but the Bahamas Women's Health Survey was conducted in 2021. Very interesting time, difficult time to undertake an exercise like this.
Mm-hmm.
We had to make numerous changes because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We were supposed to do it earlier. It got delayed. We had to make some changes. It was completed. The report was delivered early in 2022. And it has not yet been published. It hasn't been released in its entirety. It's in the hands of the government. There's nothing that we can really do about it.
Mm-hmm.
This was a project with a consulting firm that did the research. The government of the Bahamas, IDB, was involved. And we're really hoping to see the report released so that we can see all of the data, because it is so important. It is critical to any moves that we want to make toward preventing gender-based violence and mm-hmm. effectively intervening in gender-based violence.
I get you.
And as importantly, ensuring that survivors have access to justice in the fullest way possible.
All right.
One
second. Caller, we'll be with you in a moment. Go on.
Some of the data was released at a media briefing mm-hmm. following the complete delivery of the report. So we do have some numbers, and I've been sharing those numbers over the last little while, but in particular in the last couple of months, because I think it's really important that we're able to put this in context, especially as we see people getting very upset about some of the stories that we've seen, some of the losses that we've experienced as a country as mm-hmm. a result of gender-based violence, you know, resulting in cases of femicide.
All right, let's take this call and then we get to the data that we can look at. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. How are you all today?
Good, thank you.
I do have a question about the organization. So when you talk about the gender-based violence and things like that, does transgenderism fall under your portfolio as well?
We do center LGBTQI plus people, so that includes transgender people, yes.
But also that you can't do the work without considering that category of people. I use that phrase loosely, right? Because
Let me just say.
Sorry,
go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Because what gender-based violence is about is it's about the describing or the describing of behavior, the policing of the behavior of a particular gender. And so I want to say that it's when you say is that a part of your work, it's a part of the work. And anybody who's doing gender-based violence has to at some point sort of interact with that grouping of people.
Yeah, no, I understand. But the reason I'm asking is because I find, you know, across the globe now, it seems like there's a lot of these organizations that, and I'm not saying this one in particular, but there's a lot of these organizations that talk about, you know, women's rights and all of these different things, but they kind of mask it to a degree because then they push this transgenderism type of thing. And the only reason I say that is like, you know, if you look at some of these liberal cities and towns across the world, for example, where they will, you know, they will celebrate a transgender woman and pick them for, say, Woman of the Year when it's a transgender woman. And you have people nowadays that talk about, you know, men being able to have a baby. And, you know, it seems like this agenda is being pushed everywhere. Now it's in the Caribbean, it's in different areas. And my point is I just want to find how far you guys are pushing that throughout this, I guess, in this particular organization that you're working with.
I mean, the agendas that you highlighted, I think, are identifiable, but cannot be identified as a part of any reputable organization's work on gender-based violence, right? Let me put it to you like this. These things that you're concerned about, the idea of men or people assigned male at birth but who identify as women now being able to conceive children, right? That is not the root of the work. That's an issue that arises, but that's not the work itself, right? And so I could appreciate what you're saying as a LGBTI advocate. Sometimes it feels like all conversations lead back to transgender issues. But what you've seen over the last 10 to 15 years is a concerted focus on transgender issues because of the alarming rates of violence towards trans people. So the urgency you see is not necessarily an attempt to take over advocacy or to take over an issue or an agenda space, but it is an attempt to respond to what is undoubtedly, right,
mm-hmm.
undeniably a crisis of violence towards people who identify as trans. Whether you agree with it or not, the rates are alarming. They're horrifying, the rates of violence and of homicide and murder, right, towards mm-hmm. trans people. And so that's where the energy comes from, not necessarily an attempt to take over women's issues, right, but out of an urgency to find a response to just troubling violence. I mean, the rates
that's something that has to be addressed for sure. But I think that a large part of the issue is I feel like some of these organizations, again, I'm not talking about this particular organization because I don't know much about this one, but I feel like a lot of the effort is, you know, it's almost like some of this stuff is masked, you know, and I'm surprised you don't hear more of a cry from women, trying to protect their space. I mean, the men's space, we don't have that issue. But on the ladies' side, I feel like that transgender movement is really attacking that woman's space, man. I mean, you have women in, you know, you have men in sports now, and you have
so
men,
let me,
they can have children. And
let me respond to that. No, let me respond to that. So, the first thing is that it can appear that way, right? That the space is being taken over. There's a constant negotiation for space in the advocacy world, right? Like I say on the show, Junker New people can't be taking $30 million out of the economy every year and not think that the public would want to talk about it, because that $30 million could be shared by other advocacy groups, right? Could go towards other very important issues. In the same way within the advocacy community, for the longest time, like men's issues and women's issues, like women, for the longest time, women have been advocating for a greater focus of energy and resources, finances in particular, on women's issue in the broader LGBTI discussion, right? So these negotiations for space, they are constantly happening. The second thing I want to say is, it's important to not confuse an American advocacy with a Bahamian advocacy. When I talk about ontological Americanness, this is also a space that it operates in. Sometimes we are so consumed by American language, American media, American culture that we forget we're not American.
No, I agree. And that's important, because like I said, you really don't want that level of what they have going on there to come here, because that's something the Bahamas is definitely not ready for. Well, sure.
Let's just talk about that briefly. Not just that the advocacy that's taking place in the U.S. is not necessarily the advocacy that's taking place in the Bahamas. And to one of those issues, one of the issues that I thought like sort of went left, pun intended, right? I say that tongue in cheek, is the bathroom issue, right? On the extreme, extreme far side, we had trans advocates. Like, I wouldn't even call them trans advocates. I would call them outliers. I would call them mischievous troublemakers who were advocating vocally for violence against people who would stop them from using the bathroom they identify with, right? And I thought that was the most ridiculous and dangerous statement. And I thought it was important for trans communities to respond to that and say to the broader public, listen, these people, while they may have a right to speak, they must also moderate their speech, not promote violence, not promote reckless violence, not promote this, not promote a speech that would result in violence turned towards the community, especially when the most appropriate response to the question of access to bathrooms for trans people is single stall units, mandating that businesses have single stall units, at least one, so that there's not a question of which bathroom are you supposed to use, because there's only one bathroom for everyone and you use it one at a time, right? Like, that's the most appropriate response.
That's just common sense at that point. It doesn't matter.
Right. Everybody's
fighting for rights, which I understand. Everybody is fighting for rights. But again, we just have to be careful in our space. What happens in America and other places? I just think, listen, the Bahamas, we live in a sweet country. This place is a sweet place to live. And the point is, sometimes, you can have people that will dump money. One thing I will say about the trans movement globally is that they are backed by a ton of money. I don't know how, where it come from, but they have a lot of money. And what they do is they infiltrate some of these organizations to mask their agenda. And when I hear things like this that pop up, and especially when they talk about, they use the word gender and they use this and that, a lot of times they receive money from these places that are pushing a very dark narrative. And I hope that doesn't come to our country. That's all I'm saying.
I get you. You know, that's why all of these mechanisms, the mechanisms that we expect the state to operate, like the disclosures and the transparency mechanisms and KYC, know your customer, where is this money coming from, right? They're important across the board in business, right? In national development and in advocacy. That's why they created the NPO Act, right? The Nonprofit Organization Act. A part of that is ensuring that the funds that are being received by these organizations are not a part of are not coming from a nefarious network. Ms. Wallace.
Yes, I have to say that gender is a social construct. We just have to remind everyone this is a social construct. It's something that we made up. And at Equality Bahamas, we center women and LGBTQI plus people. We focus on gender diverse people, and we do not see different sets of rights or rights for different groups of people as competing.
Mm-hmm.
We know from the Declaration of Human Rights that all of our rights are interrelated and they're interdependent. And for any of us to have full access to all of our rights, everyone else has to have full access to all of their rights. So we cannot view transgender people or the transgender movement as an enemy or as a competitor. All of our rights are linked, and in particular, women's rights are linked to LGBTQI plus people's rights. And while we are pitted against each other, we are not competing and we are not enemies of each other.
Absolutely.
So at Equality Bahamas, we are pro-lesbian, pro-gay, pro-bisexual, pro-transgender, which means we don't only quietly support these groups of people or these communities, but we are actively and intentionally affirming their humanity, not just in our words, but through our work and the way that we do our work.
Absolutely, Ms. Wallace. We are all out of time. I have a text here that says, explain how gender can be a social construct. Well, sex is biological assignment. It's the sex you assigned at birth. And then gender is how you construct your expression of your sex, right? Here's the thing.
I'd love to have a full conversation.
That's what I'm about to say.
About gender, and maybe we can have a session, maybe we can do a show to really delve into it, because
right.
It's not a 5 or a 10 minute conversation.
Absolutely. Tomorrow on the Clock, we're going to be talking about the Cambridge Dictionary Word of the Year, parasocial. Populism, celebrity culture, and personality politics. So we're going to be exploring another set of words tomorrow, but we know definitely we have to get into this. Not just that, listen, June 2026 marks the 10th anniversary of the gender equality referendum. March 6th, 2026 marks the 10th anniversary of the vote in the House for the gender equality referendum. So we're going to take some time, Ms. Wallace, to talk about gender as we approach the 10th anniversary of that national event. You guys, stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next. Thank you so much, Ms. Wallace, for joining us today.
Just move on the side, let the gentleman.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.